This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! Everybody, it is a Monday edition of the Orange Bloods podcast, the OBP. Brought to you by the fine folks over at Texas Card House, 183 in Anderson Mill, Texas's premier poker private club. Go check them out. They're in the middle right now of their huge, monstrous $250,000 guaranteed tournament, $100,000 guaranteed to the winner. I think they got through the opening day ones this week. This weekend was like the opening of day two or day three. But it continues, and we do love our partners over at Texas Card House, my favorite place, needless to say, to play cards here in the state of Texas, certainly in the city of Austin. And stay tuned, I believe, in the coming weeks and months and things like that, there will be future announcements about potentially Texas Card Houses coming to you. A lot of stuff to get through in our first Monday show without the... you know, the cover of a Texas football game. Even when the Longhorns are coming off of a bye week, there's always what happened that weekend, what's happening the next weekend. There's always the ebb and flow of week-to-week games. Our first week without that, as the Longhorn coaches basically spent the week on the road recruiting players, finishing up finals last week. They'll get back into bowl workouts, later this week, I suppose. And then it kind of... you know, starts to become a Georgia conversation piece. But, you know, one of the cool things I'll be able to do today in this podcast is focus on a little bit of everything, things that interest me, things from the weekend. I got to get one thing off my chest. I don't want to say that I was forced, but I was kind of forced this weekend to go to a parade. Now, I've made this comment numerous times during the near 20 years that OrangeBloods.com has been in existence. We're not quite that far yet. I guess creeping up on 18 officially. But I'm not a parade guy. Now, when I was a kid, you know, I would wake up on Thursday morning, or I'd wake up on Thanksgiving Day morning, or wake up on New Year's Day, and, I would watch the parades like probably so many other kids, but I'll never forget living in Waco at about the age of eight, nine, ten, something like that. And I was taken to the Baylor homecoming parade. You know, this is back in the 80s. And I just remember being there at this parade and watching the floats go by and realizing this sucks. This is not fun. It's cold. It's wet. I'm watching cars go by with people sitting in them as they wave to me. Like, what is this? I don't even care if there's a 100-foot Snoopy inflatable balloon coming down the street. Like, I'm just not much of a parade guy. And I would say from that moment, moving forward, I was never much of a parade guy. You know, I stopped watching them on television. I stopped making that my Thanksgiving morning thing and my New Year's Day thing. That just became something I wasn't really interested in. But now I have 4-year-old twins. And their maternal grandmother, great-grandmother actually, invited us down to Montgomery this weekend, Montgomery, Texas, because there was a Montgomery County parade or something. And I kind of got lassoed into it because there wasn't a Texas game. This is what happens to me when the Longhorns aren't playing. Suddenly my alibis for work on Saturdays go out the window. So when my wife told me that the family was going out of town this weekend, I was included in that mix. Now it made everybody happy, from my kids to my wife to my mother, to my wife's family. But, you know, like, little things were impacted. I wasn't able to watch the Liverpool match on Saturday morning because the NBC Gold Pass doesn't include games that are on television. And we were staying at my wife's mom's lake house and she doesn't have cable. So, you know, like, I'm making these monster sacrifices here, but I had to go to this parade. And I don't mean to disparage the fine folk of Montgomery and their parade. And, you know, like, I'm sure, look, my daughter is 4 years old. She had a great time. But as far as I could tell, the Montgomery parade mostly consisted of people riding in trucks and throwing candy at people as if they were trick-or-treating. And it's December. And Halloween was 6 weeks ago. And, like, I don't know. It was cold. It had rained all night the night before. I just wasn't feeling a parade. I was forced to be there. And I can't say that at 42, I enjoyed the parade any more than I would have at the age of 8, 9, or 10. It just wasn't for me. And I was wearing shorts. I had on a short sleeve shirt. I'm an idiot. Don't ask me why. Well, I would have worn a sweatshirt, except I didn't pack very much. It was just going to be a day trip. Sweatshirt got wet. I'm left with the silk shirt. I was easily the most talked about person at the parade, because anybody that would have been coming down the parade area would have seen me and thought, what in the hell is this dude doing? Shorts? Short sleeve? Silk shirt? I didn't care. I was warned. I didn't care. It was my way of kind of protesting the parade thing in the first place. And I immediately regretted my decision when I realized, oh, it's windy today. Because I can handle cold, any kind of cold, really, if it's not windy. But when it starts to get windy, that's when you realize, like, you know, long sleeves and gloves and things like that, like, they're made for a reason. But I stood out there on the street with my little girl, Haven. Hendrix, in the biggest show of solidarity with his father that I've ever seen, he pretty much refused to watch the parade. He hung out in the car, which gave my wife an alibi to hang out in the car. They were in the car together, warm, while I stood out with Haven and her grandmother. And by the way, the great-grandmother that invited us down to the parade in the first place saw the weather and was like, nah, I'm good. Which, you know, when you get to be great-grandmother status, you can abruptly change plans on people in the middle of the plans. And you're like, you know, you're in your 80s. You can do what you want to do. She was like, it's cold and it's been raining and it's windy and I'm old and I'm not going to be outside today. Y'all can go to the parade. I don't really care. As it turns out, we never actually saw the great-grandmother this weekend, even though she's why we went down. So we're standing out there. We're at the parade. I can't tell you that there was anything impressive about the parade. I'm sorry, Montgomery. I'm sorry. But the high school band and the cheer squad, and then I think like the middle school cheerleaders, like them walking down the street, M-O-N-T, you know, like spelling Montgomery. There was a monster Toyota truck, which was an odd thing to see. It's like, hey, here's a monster truck. It is just a Toyota on gigantic wheels. And then there was one piece of the parade that was Santa's sleigh. Somebody had custom built this gigantic wooden sleigh that kind of reminded me of something from a Greek tragedy. Anyway, you know, people were sitting up on this gigantic sleigh, and it kind of appeared to me that they were as bored as I was, which made me wonder that when they're my age, are they going to remember the day that they sat up on this gigantic sleigh in the cold? And, like, does this become a memory that stays with you forever? Is that what the Montgomery Parade was for the people that were in the parade? Because as someone that watched the parade, I just felt like we were trick-or-treating. My daughter picked up candy off the ground, and that was kind of my parade experience. All right, so so parade rant out of the way. The one thing that a little bit of travel for family, holiday, hijinks, one of the things that it allowed for me to do was travel on Saturday. which means I missed the Heisman ceremony, which means that I don't even know if I would have watched the Heisman ceremony. One of the things, you know, I used to run a website called Heisman.com. And at the time, we did the greatest Heisman tracking poll that had ever been created in its place, at its time. And you got to go back like 20 years ago almost, because the first year that I did it was in 1999 when Ron Dayne won the Heisman. Although we did, what got me that job was that we did a Heisman tracking poll for KI, which was when it was going on for Ricky's senior season, was at the time the greatest Heisman tracking poll that anybody had ever done. But I feel like I'm a little bit of the grandfather of the thing that now I think has kind of ruined the Heisman, which is we get enough data off of voters from across the country that we really and truly know who's going to win the Heisman in advance. So this wasn't a Kyler Murray protest on my part. I just, you know, the Heisman's a one-hour ceremony that you really only need 10 seconds for. The winner is Kyler Murray, quarterback, Oklahoma. That's it. That's it. I didn't need to hear Kyler speak. I didn't need to hear any opinions from anybody about Kyler winning. He's a deserved winner. And I wrote about this over at my 10 Thoughts from the Weekend over at orangebloods.com. Look, man, you got to give the devil his due. When this season started, Kyler Murray had accomplished nothing as a college football player. And yet he was very open going into the season saying things like, I believe I'm on the same level as Vince Young or Drew Brees or Andrew Luck or Baker Mayfield. That he believed that he was at that level, even though outside of high school he'd done nothing to warrant whispering such a thing out loud. And then he comes out and he has the greatest statistical season of any quarterback in the history of college football. Has Oklahoma in the playoff, has Oklahoma as Big 12 champions. I don't personally like Kyler Murray. There's a history there that, you know, I've seen too much of how the sausage is made when it comes down to Kyler Murray's sausage making. And I'm not into it. Like, it doesn't matter where that kid plays. Just, he's not my bag of peanuts. And, you know, it is what it is. That being said, he was phenomenal this year. Likes ain't got nothing to do with giving a dude his proper amount of respect, and he earned it. He absolutely earned every ounce. He earned the Heisman. And the thing that you have to say about Kyler Murray now is he put his money where his mouth is, because he is now forever in that rarefied air of the greatest quarterbacks this state has ever produced. It's one thing to be an All-American. It's another to win a Heisman Trophy. Because the number of guys from the state, Drew Brees never did that. Vince Young never did that. Andrew Luck never did that. It's a short roll call. And that Oklahoma has back-to-back Heisman winners, both quarterbacks from the state of Texas, it's kind of an amazing thing. And you give them their respect. They earned it. I hope Kyler Murray plays in the NFL. The talk now, and I've even seen that some NFL scouts off the record have come out and said that they think that Kyler is either a first or a second round pick, and that I think all things being equal, you know, the thing is Kyler Murray can sign for millions in baseball, no doubt about it. But if he decides to play football, he's going to get the same amount of money essentially that a Major League Baseball team, the Oakland A's, would give him. And he doesn't have to sit on buses. He doesn't have to go through the minor leagues. And if he goes and plays football, his endorsement deals will be almost certainly worth as much as the deal that he would sign in baseball. I am now firmly of the opinion that Kyler Murray is going to play professional football. And I can't wait for it. Because Kyler Murray kind of being a one-year sensation in the college level, and him being so much better than the players that he was playing against in college, I never really get to see Kyler Murray take a big shot, and I kind of want to. It kind of makes me an asshole. I know, but I would contend that there are probably other things that make me an asshole just as much as this. And I just want to see Kyler Murray take a legitimate shot one time. Just, and because in college football, Kyler Murray at all costs looks to avoid contact. We've seen Kyler Murray turn the football over at key moments in games to avoid contact. You can't avoid contact in the NFL. The thing that I don't think that most people understand, even most fans, they don't understand the leap between major college football and the NFL. Everybody in the NFL can run. The biggest dudes on the field run like track stars. Remember that time Larry Allen at 300 and whatever pounds on Monday Night Football chased that dude down from the Saints? Like, it's just everybody's a freak. And every quarterback gets hit. And every quarterback not only gets hit, but they get hit hard. Ask Colt McCoy. Colt McCoy is going on, creeping up on about a decade into the NFL. And he hasn't had to play a lot of football in that decade that he's been a quarterback in the NFL. But when he's played, man, there ain't no avoiding the ass-kicking and the whirlpool baths that come with it. And I kind of want to see just one time. One time's all I need. It's not like I need to watch Kyler Murray get bludgeoned to death in the NFL. I just want to see him take one hit. One. Where I go, okay, well, he's going to be in the whirlpool the next day. Because I kind of feel like Kyler Murray is the first Heisman Trophy winner that's ever woken. And look, kudos to him, man. He pulled it off. He's the first Heisman winner that has ever woken up on a Sunday and never needed a whirlpool bath. Never needed a massage therapist. Never needed a little bit of extra therapy because the game was physical. Kyler Murray is the first ever unphysical Heisman Trophy winner. Every quarterback that's come before him has needed whirlpool baths. Kyler Murray is so fast and is so elusive that at the college level, he wakes up on Sundays and doesn't need the whirlpool bath. I just want to see him play one game in his life where he needs a whirlpool the next day. It feels like what's kind of due for everybody. You know? I always talk about football players getting everything that they warrant and deserve and they earn because, man, they put it all out on, they let it all hang out. They put their bodies open for everybody. And I kind of feel like Kyler Murray cheated the process. So few people could get their hands on him at the collegiate level that he just became the first non-Whirlpool needing Heisman winner in the history of the sport. You know, I just want to see him need the Whirlpool. That's all. So I do hope he goes to the NFL. And I would say this, you know, all sports need villains. And Kyler Murray does create an emotional response from me. So I hope he goes and plays football. I want to watch it. I don't have to like the guy, but look, he's a hell of a fun player to watch. He just hadn't taken many hits in his career. Maybe that changes against Alabama. Maybe to get to a national championship, there's a laying yourself on the line kind of approach that Kyler Murray will need to take. I don't know. We've never seen that before, but it you know, full confession. Yeah, I want to see like a James Harrison type just put one on him. Not like knocking him out of the game. Like something that, like a hit that every quarterback takes. Just a good old bone crushing. Oh, you stayed in the pocket and got your ass handed to you. That's football. Welcome to the party, pal. Like, I just want that one time. Just one time. Over on the college basketball side of things, here on the OBP, Longhorns got themselves, it was a doubleheader at the Irwin Center yesterday. The Lady Longhorns, who I'm not allowed apparently to call the Lady Longhorns anymore, so they're just the Texas women's basketball team, they hosted Tennessee yesterday. And it's funny because the first, I don't know that I should admit this, but, you know, like I pay attention to the women's basketball team, but I don't live on watching women's college basketball. Just, you know, there's only so much time in the day. But I realized that yesterday that there was a doubleheader, that the women played first and then the men played second, and that the women were playing Tennessee. I have paid so little attention to the Texas women's basketball program entering yesterday that when I originally saw a graphic for the matchup, it had Tennessee's name with a ranking, and it didn't have Texas's name with a ranking. And I just thought to myself, is Texas unranked and I just haven't noticed? How the hell did that happen? Surely they're ranked. And so then I think I went to ESPN.com or whatever, and I clicked on the women's basketball page. And, oh, they're ranked. Okay, they got one loss. I think Texas was 6-1 going into the game. They played number 7, number 8 Tennessee. They're undefeated. And undefeated Tennessee took out Texas. And, you know, I don't really have a ton of commentary for a game that I didn't watch. But it is interesting that Texas seems to be in this position where they're very good. That's Karen Aston has built a very good college basketball program. But there's this last huge hurdle that they haven't been able to clear, right? And Shaka Smart should be so lucky as to have the program in a place that Karen Aston has. I sometimes think that people think when I'm somewhat critical of Aston that that I'm somehow, you know, that her and criticism of Shaka Smart have to be mutually dependent. Like they'd be, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. And she can be a very, very, very good college coach who's having that one last step away from getting to greatness is proving to be very difficult. And at the same time, Shaka can be a disappointment because the basketball program is just not very good. There's levels of nuance to this. And I was reminded of that last night watching the Texas women's basketball team take on a top 10 team, a team that is a legitimate Final Four contender and coming up just short. And, you know, it's a disappointing weekend for the women where the men are like, yeah, we beat Purdue. And Purdue was ranked in one of the top 20, I think ranked in the coaches poll, but not in the AP. And, you know, at the end of the season, that's a chance to be a tournament team. So getting a win for the Longhorns over Purdue yesterday, that game going on at the same time as the Cowboys game, I did as much as I could to watch them. Well, like I was going to record it. Oh, come on now. I don't know. There's no DVR space on my television that's reserved for Texas basketball. Like I'll watch a lot of Texas basketball live, but I'll be damned if I'm watching it on DVR unless I'm fast-forwarding through it. So at that point, why not just watch little bits and pieces of it live? I saw, I think, most of the last 8 minutes of the game. I flipped back and forth and saw enough of the game that I had a feel for what was going on. I saw that dude from Purdue, I think, score 35 of his 40 points. I felt like an unlucky charm. Every time I flipped the game back to ESPN2 yesterday, the Longhorns had made like a little 5-0, 6-0 run. Every time I flipped it back, old boy from Purdue was hitting a three. So I started to feel like I was unlucky for Texas. So I was like, oh, well, I'll just watch the Cowboys game and the Red Zone channel. And, you know, I just watch a little bit of the basketball when I can. Every time I flipped over to the basketball game, dude from Purdue was knocking down a three, and it was like, why didn't Texas recruit that guy? Did I hear right? They took Jacob Young over that dude? Because that dude was balling. I don't even know who in the hell to compare him to. I saw R. Long on the message boards compare him to DJ Augustine, and I just thought to myself, man, I don't ever remember DJ Augustine pulling up from about 30 feet out like he's Steph Curry. That dude was just unconscious. And, you know, what's weird is that nobody else on that Purdue team did anything. And Texas did just enough as a team that they were able to get a win against a really good team. It seems perfectly respectable. They were able to get a win. Decent win. They needed that. Man, they need. Everybody talks about 3-game losing streaks. Look, if all of the losses were to names like Michigan State, then you just chalk that up to the game and say ebb and flow of a season. Schedule's been difficult. The problem is the first game of that 3-game losing streak was Michigan State, and the next two were Radford and VCU. And maybe you can get away with one, but you can't get away with losing two, and then suddenly you're in a 3-game losing streak. And suddenly Texas, I think, found themselves in kind of a must-win situation against Purdue yesterday. And credit to them, man, credit. And credit to Matt Coleman. Dude, that is the Matt Coleman that I've been expecting to see all season long and haven't seen enough of. And watching Matt Coleman score 22, make big buckets late, make big free throws late, make big decisions late, take that responsibility on, come through in the clutch, that's who I've been expecting to see all season long. And for me, the rest of this season, because the games are about to get real difficult. They're all going to be as good as Purdue when you get into Big 12 play. Everybody's at least Purdue-like, which is a long way of saying that there's a lot of teams in the Big 12 that at this point in time could end up being NCAA tournament type teams. And Matt Coleman's got to ball out if Texas is going to make the NCAA tournament. If Texas is going to have a good season, it cannot be done with Matt Coleman playing at the level that he's mostly played at this season. So to see him ball out against a good team at a key moment, attaboy. Is the most positive sign, I think, of the entire Texas basketball season. With all due respect to the game that Kerwin Roach had against North Carolina, we know what Kerwin is. We know Kerwin's going to be up and down. He's going to have some games where he's 1 of 10 from the floor, and then he's got the upside where there will be some nights where he's in the high 20s. Coleman has to be Mr. Steady on this team. I'm not saying he's got to be 20 every night, but he probably needs to be 15, 16. And he hasn't been that. And last night he scores 22, and every single one of those points was needed, and there was some alpha maleness back to his game on the floor, and I just, you know, that's what, if Shaka Smart's going to get a fifth season in Austin, Matt Coleman's going to have to take him there. And I think Jackson Hayes, there's a weird thing with the Texas basketball team going on right now where we know that Jericho Sims is not taking the next step that I think we all hoped that he would take. Jackson Hayes is really good. And, you know, I'm fascinated to see by how Shaka plays, handles this dynamic, because I think Jackson Hayes is a guy that needs to be in the starting lineup. And if that means that it comes at the expense of Jericho Sims, I think you have to play your best player. And maybe that's what Jericho Sims needs. Maybe that guy being given the starting job was the worst thing that happened to him, because there's a sense of urgency that he had in his game at the end of last season that just seems to be missing. But because this is a Texas team that's in kind of a funk in general, I think that his struggles just kind of bleed in with everybody else's. But I'm waiting for him to start to find that light switch again, one that Jackson Hayes has flipped on. It's amazing to me that that guy's already big time in the conversation with NBA player, NBA draft minds. It remains to be seen whether or not he would be a lottery pick, but I think I've seen him in a couple of mock drafts that have had him either late lottery or late teens. This could be a Miles Turner situation where the best player on the team is coming off the bench and you only get him from one season, and then he goes to the NBA, and then you're like, how in the hell is that guy in the NBA? He couldn't come off the bench. Couldn't get in the starting lineup. I have to think that eventually that is going to be a moot point, but look, man, we'll see. Now, little NFL discussion on a Monday as we kind of scattershot across the board of things that happen in the wide, wide world of sports. I don't know what to make of the Cowboys. Went over the Eagles on Sunday. Don't get me wrong. Anytime the Philadelphia Eagles lose, it's a good day. It's a good day. It's like, did you hear there was rioting in the streets of Nashville? No. But the Eagles lost, right? Okay, so not a terrible day. No, like, birds were attacking people, and people lost their eyes, and the birds, it was like a scene out of a Hitchcock movie. Did the Eagles lose? They did. Well, then it was a good day for America. Like, that's kind of how I feel about the Eagles. So I will never take for granted the Dallas Cowboys beating the Philadelphia Eagles. It's a joyous day to behold. So don't think as a Cowboys fan that I didn't enjoy yesterday enough. Because You're damn right. Anytime those dirty, rotten, bastard Eagle fans have a bad day, I'm a happy man. I'm a happy man. So don't think that the following commentary means that I didn't appreciate the win. I just don't know what to make of this Dallas team. It is really good defensively. We know that Zeke Elliott is one of the best running backs in the NFL. Amari Cooper has been a godsend. He is the definition of the number one receiver that this team needed. So, in theory, look, I have no problem with giving up a first-round draft pick for Amari Cooper. Because Amari Cooper is young, and he's certifiable, proven NFL badass. Like, you know, think about what the Cowboys were rolling out old-ass Allen Hurns before they got Amari Cooper. So, yeah, Amari Cooper is worth the price of a first-round draft pick that, what, will probably end up being in the high teens, late 20s? I'm not tripping over that. My issue with the Cowboys is twofold. And there's one common denominator in both of the twofold. The first fold is, man, I hate to say it because I like the dude, but Dak Prescott ain't ever going to be an elite NFL quarterback, ever. I watch Dak Prescott and I see Andy Dalton. I watch Dak Prescott and I see Ryan Tannehill. I watch Dak Prescott and, you know, no offense to Andy Dalton for putting you in the same sentence as Ryan Tannehill. Whatever Andy Dalton is, he is, you know, he's a hell of a lot better than Ryan Tannehill. But I watch Dak Prescott and I see a little bit of Joe Flacco. And maybe that's inconsistent, right? Because Joe Flacco has a Super Bowl. But what I mean is when I see Dak Prescott play football, I see a guy that has a chance to be a serviceable NFL player. But that's not the guy that I want being my quarterback of an NFL franchise for the next decade. And I really don't know what happens that changes that. Dak Prescott, for me, is a little bit like the aging Drew Bledsoe that the Cowboys had right before Tony Romo took over. He can win you 10 games. If you've got a good defense, you surround him with good players, and, you know, you come to terms with the fact that he's going to have some games that make you go, oh, God. Then that's what you have with Dak Prescott. He's a guy that if you surround him with great players, he can bus drive, but bus drive you where? That, to me, is the ultimate question. And as a Cowboys fan that hasn't seen the Cowboys win a Super Bowl and creeping up on a quarter century, it's a big deal. I'd like to see the and the reality is, I shouldn't even be mad at Dak. I shouldn't even be frustrated at Dak. I've come to grips with the reality that the Dallas Cowboys will never win another Super Bowl as long as, you know, I could live to be 100. The Cowboys are not winning a Super Bowl. Not with Jerry Jones as the owner. Jerry sold his soul for that third Super Bowl with Barry Switzer, and this is what it looks like. This is what it looks like when an owner sells his soul. They can tease you, but they ain't ever going to get over the hump. And I look at Dak Prescott, okay, what is this team, where is this team headed? It's going to win the East, whatever that's worth, now in 2018, in a world where divisions in all sports matter less and less. You know, it's just a fact. It's about what you do after the regular season that defines you. It's not like college football where a conference championship has real weight. I mean, don't go around bragging that you won an NFC East. Man, there are four teams in the division. You only got to beat three. And this is a year where, yes, the defending Super Bowl champions are in the division, but every team that's not named the Cowboys is below 500. So to say that you won the NFC East this year, you know, It's a little bit like going to an under 5 foot, lower, like 8 foot goal basketball tournament. Like, it's cool. If you win first place, keep the medal. You know, but maybe don't tell other people. Don't be going and bragging about it. So I just look at Dak Prescott. And he played very well at times. He made terrible throws at times. He nearly put the Cowboys in a situation. Dak Prescott nearly lost that game with his turnovers. And if they lose that game, they're even with the Eagles today in the standings instead of having a two-game lead with three to play, which is a long way of saying we live on a seesaw with Dak Prescott. And this team's upside to me is they probably host and win a wild card game. And then they're going to go on the road, probably to the Saints, maybe on the road against the Rams. And, you know, that's to me, that's probably the extent that this season goes for Dallas. Could they beat the Rams? Okay, maybe. Maybe they beat the Rams. Maybe they play the Saints again. But are they going to win? This, to me, the upside of this team is divisional playoffs and maybe a conference championship game. But I just, look, I would love to tell you that I could feel differently, but I don't. And then the other part of the two-folder, I told you the first fold, was just Dak in general. I have to admit, I'm a little nervous about the Cowboys in the next couple of years when Dak gets paid and Zeke gets paid and Amari Cooper gets paid. This is a Dallas team that's really, really good on defense. They have a really, really expensive offensive line. They've got a team that's won a division. They've got a team that's won a division in two of the last 3 years. They're going to win the division this year, barring something completely unforeseen. But they're doing all of this with Cooper, Zeke, and Prescott all playing on rookie contracts. Dak Prescott's probably not going to get Aaron Rodgers money, but he's going to get Andy Dalton money. We know that Amari Cooper's going to get paid. Look, Jerry might as well just bring the Brinks truck and back it up into Amari Cooper's front yard because Amari Cooper is going to get paid. And the Cowboys are going to pay Amari Cooper because that's Jerry's favorite toy. They traded for him. Oh, Amari's going to get a sweet deal. Amari Cooper will end up being a top five paid wide receiver in the NFL. No doubt about it. No doubt. And then the Cowboys have to figure out what they're going to do with Zeke. And if we go back to the DeMarco Murray experience, we know that they ran his ass into the ground and then let him go. Are they going to do that with Zeke Elliott? The smart thing in the NFL is not to give big money to running backs. But DeMarco Murray wasn't a top five NFL draft pick. DeMarco Murray wasn't Zeke Elliott, even if he had that incredible season. My hunch is that the lesson that the Cowboys learned with DeMarco Murray will be ignored, that they're going to pay Ezekiel Elliott a very large sum of money, and then your quarterback, your running back, and your receiver are all going to be among the highest paid players in the NFL at their position. What do you do then with the rest of your team? Now, I suppose trimming the fat a little bit on the offensive line, that could play a role. I don't know how much longer Tyron Smith has inside of him. But in dog years, he's like 299 years old. He is still young in theory, but in football playing dog years, he's an old ass man. And I wonder at what point the Cowboys can no longer take on that salary. Like, I just, you know, as I do with the Cowboys pretty much year in and year out, how the team is managed will likely decide so very much. And I don't know what this team does when they're having to pay five times as much money for that three guys that I just mentioned than they currently are. You got to rob Peter to pay Paul at some extent. And that means there's probably some players on defense that you're having to let go. But isn't that truly the one piece of championship quality I think this team may actually have? The offense isn't Super Bowl good. Dak's not that good. But the defense is. But over the next couple of years, as the players on offense get their money, it'll be the defense that takes the hit. It'll be the defense that'll be bringing in more young guys and gets rid of the proven guys as they go and get their money. And it makes weird, like, just the past 23 years and all of the lessons that come from learning those from those experiences make it a little harder to just flat out enjoy what has been a really nice 5-game winning streak. This team was at 3-5. Now they're 8-5. But, you know, we've seen this movie before. We've seen this movie before. The ending never changes, and it's really hard to enjoy the movie when you know that the really bad ending is around the corner. I hope I'm wrong about Dak Prescott, but it's not like the sample size I have to judge him by is so small that I could be wrong. Like, I feel like there's enough there. I feel like we know who he is. I feel like we know what he is. I feel like we know what he isn't. And those limitations, I think, are forever. A few other thoughts on the NFL side of things. I'm going to give the Texans a pass. You win 9 straight games, then you play the Colts at home, and they just laid an egg. And it happens. To me, it's as simple as that. They laid an egg. Everybody in the NFL, Pittsburgh laid an egg. Matter of fact, if you know a Pittsburgh fan, just leave them alone. Just leave them alone. Just let them have a few days to marinate on what that was. The Chiefs, you know, they won yesterday, but it took everything they had to get in and out of that. The Patriots lose in the most inexplicable way that I think I could imagine a team losing in the NFL. Excuse me. Over on the NFC side of things, the Rams got punked by the Bears. Like, it was just one of those weekends in the NFL. So I choose to look at the Texans and just say, benefit of the doubt. Anyway, I'm looking at the clock. That's going to be it for today's OBP. We will do the Ticket City podcast, not this week, just in case you didn't hear the notice. 2 weeks off the Ticket City podcast. We will do that, pick that up again right after Christmas. But all of the shows on the Yak that you've known to come and love, they'll be available all week long. I think Anwar will have one later today. Jason will have his recruiting. Dustin, it'll be a week full of podcasts. Thank you for listening. We love you over at the Yak. Happy Christmas shopping, holiday shopping, all of that jazz. Later.